This is Classic Business. Breakfast with MoneyWeb. Arabile Gumede and Nastasia Aronsa on Classic 1027.
Independent analyst Chris Gilmore joining us this morning as we chat everything markets. Chris, the negative train seems to be just flowing everywhere else. Look, the Republicans may not have won the midterms, but they seem to be winning the markets, if you can call it that. Red everywhere.
Yeah. And you know, more and more commentators in the US particularly are talking about the specter of recession hitting the US at some point in time, maybe in 2020, maybe even a little bit earlier. Look, I don't necessarily subscribe to that view, but I do take the point that this is one of the longest lasting recoveries we've ever seen in the US. Started in March 2009. And at some point in time, it's going to have to turn. And if you scrape under the surface, it's a very strange recovery you've got. Yes, some of the results we've had from the US companies, some certain US companies have actually been quite good. But interestingly enough, and I think I've mentioned this before, a lot of the money that's been that companies have received because of the lower tax rates that the Trump administration has conferred upon them is not going back into infrastructure in those companies. It's being used for immediate consumption, things like share buybacks. And the like. And that, of course, is fueling the market. So we're not really getting a huge amount of confidence in the U.S. economy. I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, frankly. So to come back to the point, I think, yes, I think there's likely to be a bit of a downturn by 2020. And, of course, this raises the issue of should the U.S. Federal Reserve be increasing rates at the rate at which they are. We're going to get probably another one in December, 25 basis points, and then maybe three or four next year. And then after that, are we going to go into a downturn? Are we going to go into a recession? If so, that's going to make things an awful lot worse. And you can see why the tension between Trump and Reserve Bank Chairman Jerome Powell is what it is.
Yeah. If we bring things a bit, bring things back locally, Discovery launching that bank, certainly not, it's not active yet, and it'll only be active in March 2019, but the official launch, which perhaps was a little preemptive of what may indeed come forward, it sounds good, but is it too good to be true?
No. Look, my experience with Discovery is it's never too good to be true. You're never, ever, ever disappointed with Discovery. The only time we were slightly disappointed, and this was because of events way beyond their control, was when they went into with Destiny Health into the US.
Yes.
And, you know, the Americans don't like anyone beating them at their own tricks, and they kind of forced them out. So, you know, the innovation is absolutely exquisite. And they've really taken their time on this one. You know, we were supposed to be seeing this by the middle of this year, in fact. So it's going to be about 9 months late. So what? You know, we're talking about something that's going to be hugely disruptive. You know, to start with, obviously, we're not talking about anything particularly fancy. But in their inimitable fashion, I think it's going to be, as I said before, it's going to be very innovative. They're going to use the Vitality as the enabler for everything, as they've done with all of their products. And I suspect, you know, it's going to end up being an incredibly sought after product by so many people across the socioeconomic spectrum.
Yeah, initially this is aimed at the higher spectrum of the market, and he's called it a behavioral bank. It is, as he said, it's supposed to be launched at the mass affluent segment, but expects it to appeal to all segments. But now it seems that, you know, we have new banks that are essentially catering for so many different kinds and levels of people. Time Bank, of course, a digital bank controlled by billionaire Patrice Motsepe, set to target mainly unbanked and the underserved clients and small and medium enterprises. Bank Zero, of course, coming on board, which is chaired by former FNB CEO Michael Jordan, and that is set to target business customers. It's complete disruption across the board here in the banking sector.
Oh, no, totally. And yesterday I went to the results presentation of a small company called Capital Appreciation. You know, Bradley Sachs and his father, Motti Sachs, and they're doing an incredibly good job. I mean, this thing is really moving very, very nicely. Again, a disruptive thing, but not disruptive in any kind of negative way at all. I mean, at this point in time, they're actually partnering with the banks. They're saying to them, you know, here's how we can help you guys.
Sure.
I think the problem is the big traditional banks are struggling now. because they've got these legacy systems that they can't really change overnight.
Yeah.
And they really can do very little about them, and it's an incredibly expensive exercise. And this is why I think you see with Standard now talking about retrenching, 500 people in their IT department.
Yeah. So that's certainly going to hurt them as well. And do you think that's a systemic problem? Do you think that's something that's going to perhaps come about in some of the other banks as well, that the sense of retrenchment?
I think it's undoubtedly going to happen. I don't see how they can avoid it. I mean, there are so many new startups, disruptive forces in the sector, some of which, you know, work with the banks. But at the end of the day, the banks, I think, are their own worst enemy. They've never really been able to understand many aspects of the market, be it at the low end, be it at the top end. I mean, for example, if you have a private bank, no, that private bank account of yours really should be able to do just about everything for you. And yet there are only maybe one or two players in the market, I won't name names, who really do it properly. At the low end of the market, you know, you've got Capitec and you've got one or two others, but some of the ones you've mentioned there are going to add to that interesting combination.
Yeah.
So I think there's good. We're looking at a huge shakeup, and the only thing that the big traditional banks can control is their costs.
Do you think those go down far enough? Do you believe that those can go down far enough? I mean, the lower they go, that begins to hurt profits and bottom lines, and that becomes a big issue. Do you think they'll look at it and say, yeah, we are down, you know, dropping prices? Or will they just be forced to anyway because of circumstance?
Well, there's two things. They can drop prices and they can cut costs. But what they can also do, and this is where I think there may be a misunderstanding. You know, if you look at these smaller players, at the end of the day, they're very consumer-centric.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to go in there and wait for 3 or 4 days to open an account. Mm. It's going to happen literally within minutes. And if you look at the kind of things that Michael Jordan is tweeting about, it's absolutely fascinating what he's talking about, Bank Zero is going to be doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that customer centricity that I think the big banks have to try and get back to.
Yeah.
And it's difficult in large bureaucratic organizations where you know, that's not necessarily the main thrust of the raison d'etre.
It's weird, though, that Standard Bank is doing this particularly to their IT department, which is supposed to perhaps help them in trying to innovate and trying to perhaps keep up with the banks coming up now. But let's unpack a little bit more about that right now.